Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Friday morning. And we welcome in our friend Jared Stillman to the program, as we do every Friday morning at 7 o'clock. Jared, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're good.
Super.
Thanks for taking time to be with us.
I'm surprised Joe is after getting his ass kicked in Jared versus Joe for the second week in a row.
Oh man.
Okay. I like it.
Right off the top.
I like it.
We'll get to that here in a minute. Let's start with how you made me believe the other day that Will Levis went Ricky Wild Thing Vaughn and threw the football into the lake when it bounced over the fence. In all actuality, I'm mad at you. You made me think that he airmailed it in the lake.
No. Do not be blaming me for that. Do not blame me for that. See, here's what's going to happen. Because what I did, all I did was read what Jim Wyatt wrote. I did not put any of my own spin or even claim that I was there and saw it. And here's what Jim Wyatt wrote. I'm glad you brought this up. Because Jim Wyatt wrote on the Titans website, one pass from Levis sailed over the hands of tight end Josh Wiley and ended up in the lake, a free souvenir for the geese.
And There's a part before that about it bouncing.
No, where?
In the article.
Levis was 1 of 4 in the first 7-on-7 period and 2 of 4 in his second opportunity, making him 3 of 8 for the day. Levis was 6 of 10 in 7-on-7 drills on day 1 of minicamp. One pass from Levis sailed over the hands of tight end Josh Wiley and ended up in the lake, a free souvenir for the geese.
You're skipping over some stuff.
This is fascinating.
I'll pull it up for you.
I'll send it to you. This is fascinating.
No. You know what? Here's probably what happened. I don't want to throw Jimmy under the bus because Jimmy's a good man. But there was a phone call that was made from the Tennessee Titans into our hotline. You know, Connor, he's been filling in for Ian. He's been doing a fabulous job for the 2 weeks that Ian's been out. But I saw the little caller ID on the hotline, on the call screener, and I'm like, yeah, that's Titans right there. Right before the last segment, after Jared versus Joe on Wednesday. And I was like, Connor, you might want to get that and see what they have to say. And the Titans had called in to tell us that the ball bounced into the lake. So my guess is that Jim probably went back and added context to the article.
So you're saying he updated the story, you think?
I think that's what happened. You're still reading, like you right now just read, like, what,
some screenshotted version or something?
Well, I texted Caroline what Jim wrote, and I was reading from the text to Caroline.
I say we still blame Jared.
In fact, if you go back and you listen to it, Jim dropped that article during the Chris Sanders interview. And I read verbatim what Jim wrote to Chris Sanders because I was reading it in live time. And that's when both Chris and I were like, the lake? And then we laughed about it for like 10 minutes.
So, Jared,
Robbie, you can say you were sorry. Well, it's okay.
I'm not saying I'm sorry. I still think you're wrong, but that's okay.
How?
We'll see. Because this is a great reason to not overreact.
I mean, you know, like you did. But whatever. We're never going to talk
about it. See, what you guys are doing right here is what these coaches do all the time. Whenever they get mad at a radio guy or a columnist, and Joe, I know you've gotten this I know you've had this sit down before with a coach, where a coach is like, you don't understand, and then lays out all this stuff that, like, nobody would know unless the coach decided to voluntarily tell us. And it's like, well, that's great, coach, but if you had told us that, then maybe it would have been different. So you're like, you don't understand. The ball bounced and went to the lake. That's great, but nobody told me that. I'm reading what was written at the website.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then and then turned it
into, I'm willing to give you a pass.
Will Levis.
Are
we not allowed to laugh about that? Again, the visual I'm getting is Will Levis going nuke-la-louche on the football field and it ending up like in the middle of the Cumberland River. I got a fisherman out there. He's out there trying to catch a trout, and all of a sudden a Will Levis fastball drills him in the head. And it's like, oh no, somebody check on Ernest out there on the lake.
So I've been trying to give you a compliment because I was listening. Well, let me say it first. I was listening to, you know, your show yesterday as I'm driving away, and you start out with, you know, Will Levis struggling, but like, here's Brian Callahan. This is what I was already thinking. You know, 7-on-7, it's experimental. For anybody who didn't hear it, basically Brian Callahan said yesterday that he wants quarterbacks to let it rip during these 7-on-7. There's no consequence. This is when you see what you can fit in, right? I mean, like, so, like, that made sense. I thought it was an informative, interesting first couple segments.
Thank you.
Now, do you want – now, let's go back a few years to Ryan – I know it's become the Tannehill show.
Oh, boy.
Do you remember – when Ryan Tannehill said the exact same thing in that camp where he threw some picks, and you're like, oh, my God, he's throwing interceptions. And you were just absolutely crapping on it. Do you remember this, Jared?
So what I
does
remember,
this mean that you have turned a new page or just that you
now,
you just can't admit when you're wrong?
Again, you're lacking the context here, Joe. I get yelled at for lacking context that I didn't even know existed.
Give me the
context. There was no way for me to know that it existed at the beginning. So the context on this is – when Tannehill said and he was throwing those interceptions in what I call the Todd Downing camp, the 2021 camp, the one where we thought that the Titans were going to have the greatest show on turf offense, and instead it was, you know, 18th. It was A.J., a broken-footed Derrick Henry, and the Scarbinis. But yeah. When that Tannehill threw all those interceptions, like, it was a story of camp. But Tannehill was talking about, you know, sometimes I'm trying things out. I was like, okay, you know, Tannehill says he's trying it out. Then he went in the season, and he was awful. And I was like, oh, yeah. We should have known.
Yeah, because
we
camp.
We should have
yeah.
known in training camp. We should have known. And
so you're sticking
I
with
you
training.
Right
so you're sticking with training camp translates to the season. That's your
the
story.
The expectations.
Yeah. I'm glad that we visited one of your worst takes now.
The expectations for the 2021 Tennessee Titans offense, not the expectations that I have for Will Levis and the 2024 Titans offense. See, I'm okay with Will Levis. Like, people are saying right now, oh, I don't care because it's June. I care about the games. And I'm like, guys, week six, Will Levis might not be right. You know, I keep using, and I'm glad actually I'm talking to you about this, Robbie, because I keep using the Jordan Love, you know, the season that he had and the season that the Packers had last year. Robbie, what'd you think of Jordan Love after six games last year?
It was not very good. It was not good at all, actually.
And so I do think that, like, you know, Bill Polian said when it comes to the Titans fans, like, hey, wait until week 12 before you hit that panic button. And because my expectations for this team are not to win, they're not to compete for the Super Bowl, they're not to any of those things that I had for that 21 team, which was coming off of the second-ranked offense from 2020, I mean, to me, totally different expectations, totally different, you know, outlook. Like, I expect Levis to struggle in the games early in the season. All I care about is, like the Green Bay Packers, we walk away at the end of the year and say, okay, got a quarterback. That's all I care about. Whereas with that Titans offense at that time, it was like, okay, this team needs to be lighting up the scoreboard. There's two totally different things. You go to training camp and it's Peyton Manning and the Colts and he's throwing a bunch of interceptions. It's like, okay, I might be a little worried about Peyton here. Whereas, again, if it's Anthony Richardson right now, I mean, I'd just be glad if the guy got on the football field and threw it because he's always so hurt. So yeah, it's a different context.
That's fine, but that context is pretty much irrelevant. The point is, yes, Jared, in those drills, you find out what you can get away with. You rip some throws that you would not do in a game. That's the point, regardless of whether you're Aaron Rodgers and you're the reigning MVP or you're a rookie. If that's the idea of this is where we let it rip, which is what Tannehill said back then, and you totally crapped on it, then the context doesn't matter. It's irrelevant to that discussion. And the idea also, oh man, that is.
But then Tannehill did have a terrible season to follow that.
Okay, so the camp.
And you think that they're completely independent, and I don't.
Yes, Jared. They're completely freaking independent. Tannehill was terrible in camp in 2019. I was like, I don't even know if he's QB2. I remember when the Patriots came here, I was like, he is awful. And he ends up being the starter and having the best numbers since Joe Montana that year.
Tannehill was not my problem in that training camp. My problem was watching Brady on one field looking like, you know.
Well, yes, there was a contrast. But the point is,
Roger
training
Clemens,
camp is to get ready for the season.
Mariota.
And then every week you have a different game plan. I mean, so training camp translates to the season? That's true. Traylon Burks worked out pretty well. Come on.
I thought that Traylon Burks' problem in all of his training camps has been his injuries, you know, and that's kind of been a problem that's plagued him in the seasons. I mean, Traylon Burks, that's why, like, I look at Tavondre Sweat, and I'm like, man, this is really the Traylon Burks path here of, you know, guy shows up, and everyone's excited, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's like, oh, he can't practice, but it'll be okay. And I'm like, I remember being told it'd be okay on Traylon Burks, and Now everybody's telling me it'll be okay on Tavondre Sweat. And so, yeah, I mean, like, I do think that, like, what you can't do is you can't tell me that practice doesn't matter at all.
I'm not saying it doesn't matter.
Which is what you are telling me.
No, what I'm telling you is that if someone had a good camp or a bad camp, you think it translates to the season?
Well, I'm going to tell you this right now. I told you this, I think, during
sometimes they're a good player or a bad player.
I have taken, and this is, again, this is my learning from experience. I have decided that anything good that I see in training camp, I'm going to completely dismiss. Because I've drank Kool-Aid on Chig because of training camp, the Kool-Aid on Burks because of training camp, the Kool-Aid on the Titans defense last year because of training camp. But if I see something bad, like how on after the third day of practice last year, I knew the offensive line was going to be terrible, and everybody told me, no, they hadn't even put the pads on.
Oh, Jared was right.
And the defense is ahead
of
the offense.
Did. I know.
And I think Vrabel was talking about Andre Dillard was working hard in the meetings. Like, if I see something terrible, I'm going to be like, oh, dear God, because
so
when
if it's
I
bad,
see
it's,
terrible,
if, so it's bad, then that will translate. If it's good, you're ignoring it. Okay.
That's what my experience of covering these training camps is telling me. And the last, like, I watched Malik Willis in training camp as a rookie, and he was terrible. And I said, Malik Willis sucks right now. And everybody got mad at me. TD got mad at me. Paul got mad at me. Paul was like, I mean, you don't know anything. Vince Young was just as bad, but had a worse attitude at his rookie training camp. You know, everybody got all mad. And I was like, I'm just saying, I just saw him throw the ball away on fourth down of a 2-minute drill. I'm like, he sucks right now. He might end up being good. I have no idea. He might develop and get good. I don't know how to judge these things. I'm not Les Steckel. Like, I'm not a quarterback guru. So I don't know. And then they put Malik out in the games, and then everyone's like, oh, yeah, Malik does suck. And so I've decided, just this is my own experience, that if I see bad, I can spot bad right away. Good oftentimes is because the other part of the equation in the camp is bad. Just like the Titans' defense last year looked good, but it was really that the Titans' offense was bad.
We had a Kuharsky impression of Stilly early this week, and now a Stilly impression of Kuharsky. That's been
a
full week here on the program.
By the way, I guarantee you, he will deny it. There's no way that he will accept that he said that, but I'm promise you, he, like, clear as day, said to me that Malik Willis and Vince Young were in the same spot as rookies in training camp, but that Vince had a worse attitude, and I think that has to be all-time bad because, I mean, Robbie, you remember when Vince got on the field, like,
oh, yeah.
I mean, look, Vince may not have worked the hardest. Vince may have done some crazy off-the-field stuff. And Vince might have been, quite frankly, at times a terrible passer and never developed. But, I mean, Vince Young won, like, 9 football games as a rookie and, like, led the NFL in fourth-quarter comebacks and game-winning drives and made the Pro Bowl and was Rookie of the Year. And I can tell you that Malik was not that as a rookie.
By the way, you
– a lot of time at TGI Fridays, too.
Yeah.
You also have a take that the Titans ruined Vince Young and Marcus Mariota. Is that correct?
Yeah. I think they broke Mariota physically. Like, I think that, like, between the terrible offensive line his rookie year that got him hurt and then the broken leg, I think that Mariota never, you know, I think that the injuries always became a thing with him because it's like as soon as that elbow was hurt, it was, oh, God, here we go. And then I think the constant changing of the offenses and the coordinators and everything else, I mean, I really think that hurt Mariota. I think the thing with Vince Young was that Jeff Fisher never wanted Vince Young and never embraced Vince Young and never built his team and offense around Vince Young the way that, say, John Harbaugh did with Lamar Jackson, where as soon as they decided, like, okay, Flacco is going to the bench, Lamar's in there, they're like, okay, we're building the entire offense around Lamar. Greg Roman comes in as coordinator. They change up the players to fit Lamar. And Jeff Fisher never did that. I mean, Jeff Fisher went out and got Matt Leinart's coordinator to go coach Vince Young. And I don't think Jeff Fisher ever wanted Vince Young. And so I really wonder what would have happened if Floyd had done what he should have done and pulled the trigger on Jeff Fisher and gotten rid of him and brought in a good coach who embraced Vince Young. I think Vince Young could have been a special player. I really believe that.
Jared, thank you for being with us. We'll be listening later today at 2 o'clock.
Joe, do you think Vince Young could have been a special player?
Look, I was not here for his tenure, but based on information I've heard, it sounds like he did a lot of self-sabotaging.
I think a lot of that, like, so I used to ask the old man about that. I used to say, Floyd, what happened to Vince Young? And all he'd ever say is, all I know is when I was here, he was rookie of the year and he was going to the Pro Bowl. After that, I wasn't here, so I don't know. Which was, to me, the translation of Jeff Fisher screwed it up. And I believe that.
Yeah.
And I believe that, I mean, the relationship between Vince and Fisher, like, I think the reason why Vince had such a, you know, bad attitude, bad work habit was because he thought the coach was out to get him and wouldn't listen to anything he said. If he had a coach that he thought, you know, was behind him, perhaps that would have changed things. So I think they ruined Vince Young. I love Vince Young. You go back to rookie year Vince Young, that dude was special. And there's a reason why Vince won all those games. I mean, he wasn't great as a passer, but you can kind of work on those things. But, again, that's all, I guess, subjective. Guys, have a great weekend.
Thank you, Jared. Appreciate it. We'll you react too. To what Jared had to say, including one thing we didn't get to with him. We did not have time to, but some interesting comments from Elliot Friedman on the UC Soros front yesterday. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
So you think they well could strategize by saying, let's see where Shesterkin sets the market before you even think about signing. Is that a strategy that has been used before?
If I was an agent, I would do that. If I was the Predators, I would say, hey, that's their situation. This is our situation. I think with Soros, I think the player wants to stay. I think ideally the Predators would like him to stay. But the one thing I do think is there's a limit to where the Predators will go. I think the reason that there was all of this trade talk this year at the deadline is because the Predators had an idea of what Soros's people were thinking. And they were like, yeah, we don't know that we want to do that. So now you kind of have to, regroup, see how everybody feels, see if feelings are changed. I mean, the thing is, like, agents talk to each other too.
So that was Elliot Friedman yesterday on Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace discussing the UC Soros contractual situation. And Joe, basically, talking about the idea that if you're Soros and his agent, do you want to see what happens with Igor Shesterkin in New York first? Let that contract get done and maybe reset the market of goaltending a little bit and then try to get a deal done with the Predators after that, and kind of the pros and cons of that from the Nashville Predators side as well. What do you make of that idea thrown out there yesterday by Elliot Friedman?
Well, obviously, we just kind of had this discussion with the receivers, right? So I think, obviously, whatever Shesterkin does to reset the market, I mean, Soros isn't going beyond that. Like, Shesterkin's going to get a bigger deal than Soros, right? I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Yeah.
Yes.
I guess, does it help? Does it help a little bit if he hits a eye-popping deal? Yeah, I guess so. It could, you know, you could maybe get yourself up a little bit there, but even the tone there, I try to read between the lines with Eliat, which is I will call him until he calls Caroline instead of Carolyn. But even the tone there, you know, it's like, and I could be reading too much into things, but it almost feels like, you know, this is not like a slam dunk, which, I mean, I'm not surprised by, but obviously at the end of the season, Barry Trotz was pretty clear and adamant that, you know, the idea was to get this done.
Yes, I think the idea is to get it done. I did also find, like, not that this is some huge surprise, but Elliot talking at the end there about, you know, there's obviously a limit to this from the Predators and like how high they're willing to go. I do wonder what that is. Like, what is the limit? Because, you know, one thing that's been interesting in this conversation that's been ongoing for, you know, a year now with us, and Willie has gotten in on it. You know, Willie has talked about, like, if you're the Predators, could you get him for basically a team friendly deal when you factor in the state income tax and him wanting to be here? Like, could that factor into the price where it's like 8 years, $7.5 million or something like that? Maybe eight at the max. And I've always kind of thought that that's probably unlikely. Like, if I'm Soros and his agent, like, I'm not doing that. You've got me at a discount for basically the last 5 years. based on the goaltending ability that I've had. Certainly the last three, it's been one of the most ridiculous contracts in the NHL in terms of the value the Predators have gotten back from him. So, like, if I'm Saros, my standpoint is, yeah, I've already given you guys a discount. I'm not doing that again. I don't know if that's going to be the way it ultimately plays out, but I'd be interested to know, like, what is the point of no return for the Predators in terms of the price?
Yes, I'd love to know that. And what's the no movement clause discussion as it may relate to price also?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and then there's the what's Shesterkin going to get? You know, Elliott started throwing out a Carey Price comparison, not necessarily from a dollar amount figure, but from a percentage of the cap figure. So Carey Price signed a 8-year, $84 million deal for $10.5 million per in July of 2017, which has ended up obviously not to be a very good contract. But I think it was around 14% of the cap. And, you know, Elliott ran some numbers, like 14% of the cap now would be like roughly almost like in the neighborhood of $12 million. That's a lot of money for a goalie.
That's a big number.
I don't know if he's going to get that, but I'm really interested to see where Shesterkin ends up, because I think most people would agree Shesterkin is going to get paid more than UC Saros is going to get paid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no question. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, this is where the cap really needs to start going up, you know? It's like when we go back and forth between NFL and NHL talk, it's like, man, like $12 million now shouldn't sound so ridiculous, right? Like, we should be advancing. But it's also, there is a little bit of not deflation, but slowed inflation at that position in particular.
Stilly is demanding a full apology from me from yelling at him about the water thing. Should I give it to him? Should I give Stilly an apology? Are we convinced enough that he was duped by the Titans, and that it was added later into the story? There are screenshots Zach in Nashville.
Yeah, I was going to say, known Stilly antagonist Zach in Nashville put up a screenshot and said, unfortunately, Stilly is right, damn it.
All right, I'll do it. Stilly, I apologize. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for yelling at you.
No,
you did
God,
not lead
please,
me astray.
No!
You did not lead me astray.
I don't think you necessarily – I mean, the bottom line is, I think this is a great example of the overreaction when you weren't there, you know, and maybe how you should be a little bit more measured. So I think, I don't know, it's fine. I mean, he asks for apologies all the time because he was right, because he always, you know, goes back and tells us how he was right about stuff. Like, if we actually did a scoreboard on takes of his, right and wrong, he would owe an apology to Nashville every day when he opens his show.
615-737-1025, our phone number. The Super Regionals starting today for the Tennessee Volunteers. We'll get into that. And what is Tennessee's biggest threat to a national title in that path this season? We'll get more into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Friday morning. We're taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. The Super Regional coming up for the Tennessee Volunteers this weekend against Evansville. Joe Rex Road will be there live and in person to break it all down. Joe, your thoughts on the matchup for Tennessee against Evansville and your thoughts on their path now to a national title, should they get past Evansville and get to Omaha? How equipped is this Tennessee team? What do you think the biggest threat is to this group as they move forward here?
Well, the thing is, there's going to be a Tennessee fan who wants to fight me. I don't see a
there
huge
is.
Threat.
Oh, boy.
I know. But what I mean by that, I'm not saying I don't see teams that can beat them. I mean, sure. You look through the Super Regionals, you have, first of all, you've got seven of the top eight seeds, including the number one seed, Tennessee. Are there teams that could beat them? Sure. Like, Texas A&M is loaded. I mean, Georgia has the best player probably in the country in Condon. You know, Florida State has a couple superstars, and that's a possible, you know, early matchup in Omaha. You've got, I mean, Kentucky is, you know, Kentucky is has been one of the stories of the year. You got these SEC teams. The SEC is loaded as always. Hasn't been the greatest SEC performance. A little bit disappointing. But, yeah, there are teams that can beat them. But, again, to go back to last year, like LSU, it was just absurd with Tommy White in that lineup, plus Paul Skeens and that rotation, him in particular. It was just like that is just a super team, you know? That was an example of a team that, you know, had some stars, but also then added to the portal stars, and they were scary. There is not, you know, when you look at like pro prospects, we've talked about this, but there is not like a pitcher out there, like a dominating pitcher out there left in the field where it's like you have no chance against that guy on the wrong day, you know? They're just So look, could pitching get the? Is there good pitching? They'll see. Yes. I mean, Evansville has a freshman ace who, that's their hope, is that he's got to win his game, and I don't know if he's starting today or not, but he's got to win his game, and then you know you try to find a way. Other than that, there are pitchers that can hold the Vols down, especially once you get to Omaha, which they will. After two wins this weekend.
Oh, boy.
And I'm sorry. And maybe they'll drop a game. Maybe this will be interesting. But they're going to win. They're going to get to Omaha. And in that park, which certainly is a lot more spacious than their park, some of those mid-range, you know, warning track shots are just caught in the outfield. They could lose. But they're the number one seed. And they have the most pro prospects, and so that doesn't translate. But I think we might finally, 25 years later, be talking about a number one seed winning the whole thing. 25 years later, after Miami did it in 1999.
So J.C. Latham, looking really good. Inside linebackers are strength for the Titans. The Vols unopposed to a national title. What a morning for Rex Road it's been today.
It must be my Dwight Schrute shirt that I'm wearing that my daughter got me. It just puts me in a great mood.
No,
I don't
God,
know.
Please, no.
You know that if Tennessee loses tonight, or certainly if they lose this series, people are going to be all over you on Monday. You got to know that heading into this weekend.
They will be. They'll be so mad anyway that hopefully they'll forget about me. That's my hope, you know. Like if they lose to Evansville, like, you know, I mean the world is ending. Caleb says, yeah. Tell Joe Christian Moore is the best player in the country. It's not close. It is close, actually. And you know what, you can definitely make a case for Christian Moore. It's not that but Caleb, come on, it's not close. It's close. Yeah, Christian Moore did win the Triple Crown, so he certainly had a case for SEC Player of the Year. But Condon is hey, I'd love to see that matchup in some kind of a future meeting here in Nebraska.
Yep. Pete from Adairville says UT's biggest threat is Vitello. He's shown that he can't win big games. What do you think of that?
Wow. Okay. So tell me, because look, I'll go back to 2 years ago when certainly I was in Knoxville for the world ending in a sports sense when they lost to Notre Dame. He could be dinged that day, I believe it, for leaving Chase Burns out there a little bit too long. I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, he left Chase Burns in a little bit too long. Probably should have gone to the bullpen one hitter earlier. So,
yeah.
Okay. There's at least a coaching move you can look at. But this, like, he can't win big games. You got to help me with that, Pete. I mean, was Stanford, which, by the way, had their own ace, who was one of those dominant pitchers who – no one wanted to ever see. Was that a big game in Omaha? Because Quinn Matthews pitched for them, and Tennessee won that game, came back from an early deficit. Fantastic win. Does that count? Does that not erase that he can't win big games? Obviously, the Notre Dame series super regional loss 2 years ago is the biggest disappointment easily of his era because that team was insanely loaded. But I don't think that's an accurate assessment of Vitello.
Well, look, there's certainly more for him and more for this program to prove once they get to Omaha, right? Like beyond the disaster scenario of losing to Evansville this weekend. Like if that happens, then people are going to freak out and understandably so and all that stuff. But I do think like once they get to, if they get through this weekend, they get to Omaha. There is still more for them to prove of being better in Omaha. I know they won a game there last year, but making a deeper run, even if it's not resulting in a national title. Like, I do think there's more for him and more for this program to prove once they get to Omaha that still is left out there and that they haven't accomplished yet. Now, does that mean that Tony Vitello can't win big games? No, I think anybody that says that right now is not living in reality.
Yeah. Look, they saw Paul Skeens, man. So you can blame Vitello if you want. He's sitting there watching his guys just look mystified all day with him on the mound.
By the way, is mystifying some Major League Baseball hitters right now, too.
Right. He comes immediately in a year later, and he looks great in the majors. So, yeah. Now, look, we always are going back and forth on Vanderbilt, Tennessee. By the way, Vanderbilt, as we talked about, Mike Baxter, they have moved on from Mike Baxter. So there's your answer. One, that answers that Tim Corbin's coming back. And two, that answers that, you know, he made a big move like that. And but we always make these comparisons with these programs. It's inevitable, and it's always going to be the case. And it's great. I love that we have two programs at that level that we compare. I mean, how many people were saying that about Corbin, right? Can't win the big game, can build a program, and he can recruit, and the kids love him, and he's a great mentor, but can't win the big game. Did he get smarter? Like, did he change something in his management style, coaching style? Or is it baseball? And, you know, you do the same thing every day, and you prepare, and you hope your players perform in those key moments.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning here on the program. We'll do that. Teron Davenport coming up at 8 o'clock. All that ahead, Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, the game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Oh, this is so frustrating.
He's kind of ugly, though. With the Tennessee Oilers, gonna
get all over you. It is that time today, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road. You can check it out every morning here on the program. Joe Rexroad's rant of the day. Joseph, the floor is yours. I turn things over to you.
Thank you very much. I guess this goes along with the theme of the day a little bit. But every once in a while, someone brings up Caleb Farley on our text line or our phone line. And I know for me, it's usually a quick dismissal because people are like, what about him? What about him in the rotation? Where is he going to be? And I get it. Caleb Farley was this team's 2021 first-round pick. Just like the 2022 first-round pick, Treylon Burks, there's always going to be more attention for him while he's on this roster. Also, like Burks, you know, he's been drafted and signed over, and he's been reduced to someone who is fighting, you know, for a job, essentially, and absolutely counts as a first-round mistake. But I want to, for a moment, play a couple minutes of a conversation a few of us had with Caleb Farley yesterday, because I think it serves as a good reminder for all of us who follow sports in any way.
I'm telling you, God has truly came through and done the impossible. And really, I'm serious. So I have to proclaim that loud and clear, because it truly has been an impossible situation that I felt hopeless and helpless. And somehow I'm still standing here in cleats practicing. And I get to go home and watch some plays that I make and whatnot. So I'm extremely grateful, guys.
Your family situation too, I'm sure that's had that weigh heavily.
It's been some very dark times. Yeah, very dark times. And like the early statement about, you know, just wanting to get out there and get in pads and stuff, man, I would love to just go out there and just, you know, this is my year four, last year on my deal, you know, I'm ready to empty the tank and just deplete and just let it go, you know, be loose and aggressive.
Who has helped? You mentioned Chidobe. What has he done, and maybe others who have kind of helped you through all of this?
Well, I would say, like I said, the circumstance and the situation, it can have a mental pull on you in some ways where you try to act like something's not there, but it's there. But Chidobe has caught me, you know, mentally in some of those areas and absolutely not allowed me to stay there. And I think he needs to be, you know, acknowledged for that, because that's what a leader does. And
it's great to see somebody older that he doesn't have to do anything for me. You know what I'm saying? To do stuff like that. I think it's awesome.
There was a lot more with Caleb and a lot of, you know, a lot of appreciation and a lot of openness about how much despair he's been in. And the reminder is that we're covering human beings here. So it's always it's an occasional good idea to remind yourself of that. I mean, Caleb Farley, where he is in his career, like he's done, as far as I know, not one thing wrong of his own choosing to get here. I got nothing. I mean, let's review the situation. He's a freshman at Virginia Tech. He lost his mother, Robin, to breast cancer. She was 53. She had had it when he was younger. She fought it. It came back. He dedicated his career to her. That same year, he blew a knee. That started the injury, cycle for him. He changes back forever doing a deadlift in a Hokies training session as a junior. That started a wave of surgeries that changed him forever. And yes, the Titans messed up and drafted him where they did, and they did not do the medicals right. So when we talk about Caleb Farley, we talk about that, and we talk about how he's not a factor and all these things. Last year, he loses his father, Robert, to an explosion at his home because of a natural gas leak. And this guy is sitting there yesterday, and this is just like I said earlier with Latham. I would encourage anyone to go find. That was a snippet, but there's just a lot more from him, including talking about Chidobe Awuzie and what he's done. His chess buddy, Awuzie, who's come in and really helped him a lot. Like the appreciation, the gratefulness, and just the ability to fight through all that and still have the attitude he does. I mean, if you root for anything in sports this year, root for Caleb Farley.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought this up because the comments there were, I thought, from the heart and really, really good from Caleb Farley yesterday. And again, this is a situation where two things can be true. This has clearly been a draft pick for the Titans that has not worked out, and it's hard to envision him becoming a starter and contributing at cornerback in any meaningful capacity for this team moving forward. And their actions kind of tell you that too. Look, the guy who drafted him is gone. The coach who was there when he was drafted is gone. They've signed a Woozy. They went out and traded for Legarius Sneed. So they've moved on essentially at the corner position from the Titans standpoint. But man, what a story it would be if Farley could carve out a role for himself in some capacity, whether that's on special teams, whatever that would look like. You know, the expectations aren't going to be high, and you know, I don't know that he's going to make the team. I don't know what that's going to look like. But a situation where two things can be true of, yes, it was a bad pick, and it has not worked out well for the Titans. To your point, it hasn't been anything that Caleb Farley has done. It's just been brutal injury luck with him. And I think if you're a Titans fan, once you, like, get over the fact that, you know, it's a bad pick. Like, it is what it is. But I would be rooting for him nonstop. Like, if he can carve out a role for himself doing anything this year, I think it would be awesome.
Yeah, it's like, I think when things like this happen, look, we don't know. I mean, obviously we don't follow these guys around in their personal lives. So sometimes, you know, someone has injury issues, but maybe they're also not, you know, whatever. They're not pouring everything into it. I mean, there's a lot of reasons that people don't make it in this league. The reality there is that, like, it's really, really hard to truly make it in this league. I have not heard or seen anything that suggests anything but pure effort, passion, great attitude, desire to be great from him from the start. And his body has not let him do it. He had a serious knee injury as well. Here he's, of course, had more, I think, a microdiscectomy. I will not try to say what his condition was previously and mispronounce it, but he's had a discectomy, microdiscectomy, knee injuries, and it's just, you know, I was inspired listening to him talk yesterday because, I mean, that just, he's just gone through more than most people go through. The reality of it is, and he's a kid in his 20s.
Yep, and look, credit to him. Regardless of how it turns out, I mean, Joe, you know this as well as I do. It would have been easy for him given everything that happened to him in the last year, to just give up, right? To just say, you know what? I lost my dad to a natural gas explosion. I have another back injury that I'm having to deal with. I'm done. Like, I just can't do this anymore. And he has gotten himself to where he is back on the field. He is participating in practice. By all accounts, he's worked his butt off to get back out there. So, again, regardless of how it turns out for him in terms of his career, I think he deserves full marks for that.
Yeah, at one point yesterday he said, look, he said, all the nerve stuff, like, I'm never going to be what I was before, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that was an important thing. I mean, he acknowledged, like, I'm never going to – but he said, you know, whatever is left in me is going to be out there. And he thinks it's good enough to get the job done. You know, could he be a special teams guy and a depth guy at corner? I mean, not discounting that possibility. I think he's going to be one of the interesting stories in camp, just to see if he can make this team.
No doubt about it. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Thank your thoughts on Rex Rhodes' piece on Caleb Farley there. Hard to call it a rant. Wasn't much of a rant today, which is cool. I'm glad we did that. Glad you brought that up.
A pause-a-rant.
A lot of positivity from Rex Rhodes today.
A tox-a-rant.
Yep. We'll have Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, host of Talking with TD, coming up next. Make sure you tune in to 102.5 The Game tomorrow as the Nashville Cats take on the Billings Outlaws. Pregame at 6:30, kickoff at 7 o'clock. Coverage also available on the 102.5 The Game app and at thegamenashville.com. Cats football coverage presented by Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.